Great teaching happens when teachers get time to think. Walk into an Educate classroom and you'll find a consistent approach to homework, teachers who know where knowledge gaps are, and students who are doing regular retrieval practice. With Educate, you can be free from marking homework by the end of the week. Students have now answered over 1 billion questions on Educate. If you're looking to set up centralised homework and revision in your geography department, you won't be disappointed. Your first month is free at www.educate.co.uk/geography.
Hello there. Thanks for joining me today on another Job Pod. Today, I have two guests. We're going to be talking about Educate. But before we do, I just want to introduce my two guests. Charlie Derbyshire is the MD and founder of Educate, and Claire Power, who's head of geography in Sussex. Now, for very briefly, for those who don't know, Educate is an online formative assessment system which got smart adaptive learning, which Charlie developed in 2011. So we're going to really unpick that later on in this podcast. Claire, you've been working with Educate since 2018. I saw your tweet in 2018 where you said, "Does anyone know anything about this Educate?" You're a geographer, a cat lover. And as I looked on your Twitter feed, which I think we probably ought to be calling X now, you've got a wonderful panorama of the Great Wall of China. So I bet you've been there at some time.
Yeah, it was one of my first overseas trips.
Fantastic. So welcome to JogPod, both of you.
Hello. Good to be here.
Thank you.
Charlie, I'd like to start with you. But before we talk about your brainchild, Educate, I just want to get a bit of background, because you completed a BA Honours in Experimental Psychology in 1999. That was at Brasenose College. So that made me think, well, I better have a look at this. I'll just see what this means. It sounds fascinating. But then I was stuck. What's the difference between psychology and experimental psychology? That's the first question. I'm going to lump three questions in here. Why did you choose it as a career? And how did that influence your thinking into what you produced in the end, this wonderful Educate resource?
Right, okay. Well, that takes me back a bit. Yeah, experimental psychology, I think Oxford being what it is, they like to make everything sound a bit more special than anywhere else. So they call it experimental psychology. And actually, most psychology courses around in universities these days are all experimental psychology courses. And that means doing experiments to find out about how the brain works. So you might do them about cognitive psychology, you might do them about neurophysiology, and you might even do them about social psychology. I think it was used to distinguish between kind of psychotherapy when the course was started in the 60s or 70s or whenever it was, I think. But really, in clinical psychology, but really it's about doing experiments to find out how the brain works.
But you couldn't have had an inkling of that when you were at school, because you don't do that. So something made you think, oh, when I go to university, this is what I'm going to do. What made you think that one?
I don't really know. It's just really interesting to find out why we think things. Why do we think things that we think? Why do we behave the way we do? Because we think we know what we're doing, don't we? But actually, there's so many experiments that can prove that you don't know what you're doing. Like, there's logical tests. We can't reason logically. Our perception is changed by things that we're not aware of. Our thinking is changed by things that we're not aware of. And I just found it really interesting at the time. I should say that was until I started the course, at which point I found it a lot less interesting. Yeah, it wasn't really the course for me, even though there were really interesting bits. The way it was taught was not really that well suited to me.
But it must have fired your enthusiasm and interest to carry on, because it led to this later, which is all about underpinned by how people make decisions. But what happened between you leaving university in 2011? What were you up to then?
Well, quite a few things, really, I suppose. I'm from the Lake District, from Cumbria, and I went back after my degree and I saw a little advert in a newspaper as you did those days. And it was for people who wanted writers for revision guides. And it was for CGP, who do those kind of slightly cartoon style revision guides. They've been about for a few years, and it was actually set up in a village just like round the corner from me. I didn't know anything about them at the time. And obviously now they sell like 6-7 million books a year or something like that. And they employ like 150 people, which for like a village in Cumbria is a massive amount. But I got a job there over summer just, and I was just asked to write some questions for a Key Stage 2 maths book and do illustrations for them. And I really liked it. And then I thought, I might just keep doing this. You know how it goes. You can have career plans. Well, some people have career plans and they you know, stick to them. Other people, most people, you just do one thing. You think, oh, I'm not sure about that. And you do another thing. And eventually you kind of find something that you quite like. And you don't really know how you got there. But that's how it goes. So I ended up doing that. And then I just found it really satisfying trying to write and create resources, in that case, books that helped teachers teach and children or students learn. Like, what, it's such a satisfying problem,
especially when it works. I mean, when you, these sorts of questions that create light bulb moments are really difficult, as we'll come on to talk about later, to construct.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I remember for English, I did English literature at A level. And I remember thinking that the kind of text guys, remember those York Notes things, like a book full of text about the book. I thought, well, they're rubbish if you don't like English. And a lot of people who do GCSE English don't really like it. So I tried to work out a way of changing that. So we did a comic strip at the beginning just to take you through the plot. And I broke it down to like what's happened, who the people, and then into the themes and then into the kind of language that you need to analyze. So like break it down. So if you don't really like English, but you want to get some good grades, it'll work out. It'll tell you how to answer questions properly for the exam. And that was really satisfying. I remember we did one of Mice and Men. It sold like 40,000 copies in a year. And now they're like the best-selling text guides. And it was just really satisfying to do that. And then we did some A-level maths things and geography and GCSE English and all different subjects. It was great, really.
And it all led to Educaking 2011. I'm going to ask you this because my spell check keeps changing it. Where did the name come from? And you keep saying Educate every time I put it in. Nope, that's not what I want.
Well, you're lucky because I can't say Educate now. I just say Educate. Educate people. It's really irritating. It's kind of practical, really. I needed a website name that wasn't taken. I wanted it to be short. I wanted it to sound educational. And then I think I sat at like dinner with my brother, really, just going through names and just playing around with like letters. I was probably just whizzing through all the consonants, really, trying to work out what it could possibly be. And I thought, oh, that's really silly. That's way too silly. And then I thought about actually things that are a little silly can stand out in a way, and they can be slightly, they just kind of stick in your mind. And also, I really like cake. Like, I know it's a bit stupid, but like I genuinely really, really, really love it. And so my brother was saying, look, this is great. It's about education. Like, who doesn't like cake? It's a bit silly. It'll stick in people's heads. And I was saying, well, it's got nothing to do with, you know, doesn't sound very techy. And then I thought, actually, that's great because I want to do something it's not like fussy and formal. I want it to be friendly and kind of accessible. And having something not really obvious is all right.
Well, I think people find out that you've succeeded by the time we've finished this podcast if they've never come across Educate before. It's been fascinating working with it, but more of that later because I'd like to talk to you, Claire, and I'm on more familiar ground now than experimental psychology because at least you're a geographer and I understand what's going on there. It's always interesting to find out why geographers become geographers. So what was your career path? Why geography? And what inspired you then to go from doing geography to wanting to teach?
Okay, quite straightforward, really. Geography was my just one passion in school. And I think that really stemmed from one, having, you know, really good geography teachers throughout secondary school, but also my grandfather. He had a really like keen interest in the world around us, both, you know, more physical and kind of like nature based, but also kind of human developments, history. I grew up in South Wales, so there's a lot of kind of really good geography going on in that region. And so, yeah, I think it was a bit of a combination of the classic kind of watching Attenborough with my grandfather and him taking me out on kind of like little field trips and such like. And then having those inspirational geography teachers in school and feeling like this is something that I understand, I'm really good at. So it was kind of the only subject that I really wanted to do. I went to university and did a geography degree, really enjoyed that at Swansea. After that, then I knew I always wanted to teach. It was the thing that I was always saw myself being a geography teacher, but I didn't want to do it straight from university. So I spent some time working as an estate agent. And then after that, went into environmental consultancy recruitment. So I was working with some of the big kind of consultancy firms in the UK, recruiting ecologists, renewable energy engineers, and such like. So that was really interesting because it was kind of working with people, actually putting geography into action. And then, yeah, I got to the age of about 27, I think, and just thought, right, now is the time. Now I'm ready to teach. I feel like I've got a bit of background to me. And yeah, I've never looked back.
It comes up time and time again, and I think it's well worthwhile geography teachers hearing it over and over again. But the inspiration good geography teachers have on their pupils is really quite amazing, as it should be, I suppose. But time and time again, people talk about how inspired they were by their geography teacher. So you went into teaching, mm-hmm. and then I mentioned earlier, I saw your tweet, so something piqued your interest in Educake, because you then went on to ask a question on Twitter, which perhaps we should call X now, just to find out who else had been using it. What prompted that? What prompted you to look?
So it was 2018 and I moved to my current school and took on the position of head of geography. So I actually was in charge of the budget for the first time, so I could make decisions about, you know, what we were buying into, not buying into. Kind of coming into my school and kind of picking up the department where it was, I very quickly recognised that we needed to have a focus on retrieval practice. The department had been quite short on staff, been quite a lot of kind of changeover in a couple of years. We needed to improve that kind of like rigour in learning to help students with their GCSE in particular. Our science department was also using Educake at the time. And so essentially, it was kind of, you know, would you like to have a look at this? Put the feelers out on what was then Twitter. And then we arranged for a free trial, which I think possibly Charlie might have gone on for like 3 months or something like that. And very quickly kind of saw, actually, it's a really useful tool to add as part of our toolkit for our GCSE students. And we've used it ever since. So it's a bit of a combination, really, of kind of recognising the need, having another department with the school that was already using it, and just very quickly seeing how useful it was for us.
We've thrown a couple of teasers out there about how useful it is and perhaps what its academic underpinning is. So it's about time we went into a bit of detail then with this, Charlie. I wrote this question down because it's a small question, but it's a huge answer. How would you describe Educake? What is it?
I've never really been very good at this. I should be better, seeing as I get asked it a lot. Essentially, it's a bank of thousands and thousands of questions that teachers can use to create quizzes for their students to answer on any device like phones, tablets, PCs. The students get instant feedback, so then misconceptions don't stick in their head all the time, stick in their brain all the time. They get corrected instantly, and they get positive feedback if they get something right to reinforce that. And then the teachers get a kind of clear view of what their students know and what their students don't know. So then they can change their teaching in lessons to come. So they can think, okay, my class didn't really pick up this bit and this bit. I'm just going to go over it at the beginning of next class. And so that is a kind of overview. Claire can probably answer it better because she actually uses it. I'm on the other side.
Yeah, for us, it's a really good bank of questions. So like if you're thinking about teacher workload, we find it very quick and efficient to kind of go in very, very clearly laid out which topics we want to set questions on. It's also got a filtering system, so you can set questions by like type of question. So if I've got a class I know is struggling with recall, I can set them recall questions. If it's about application, there are application questions, or you can also filter by difficulty. So it's just very, very user friendly. And students, again, that instant feedback that they get, if they get a question wrong, it tells them kind of what and why. I would say that whenever I use Educake, I always set a minimum pass rate. For students, and if that means that they have to go back through it and redo the quiz, then that's what they do. And then you can really see that the progress that they're making. And again, it's a short-term kind of recall then, but builds into their longer-term learning. And just that instant feedback for me. So there is a function when we're looking at whole class, their result. You can hide students' names, so you can obviously have it up on the board. And I always pick then that, you know, the two or three questions that the class found the most difficult. And when we can talk through them, so that might, that is quite often the starter for the next lesson. It's going, right, okay, so like this, you know, and sometimes that's quite surprising for me. You know, a question that I wouldn't have thought that they would have struggled on. Okay, let's pick this apart. Do we need to do some more work on it? Or I might then go and find some other activities with that question. Sometimes it's just a case of, you know, addressing it kind of with Educake on the board. Just very, very almost like low input from us, but a really good output in terms of what the students take away from it. We find it just really useful for that.
When I was doing a bit of research on this, it reminded me of something that happened when I was at the Geographical Association as programme manager. The GA runs a quiz that's done through branches, and I had a bank of question setters who were really good at setting various different questions, free form and multiple choice. And I also looked after the consultancy, the GA consultants to the GA register, and people would apply for that. One person applied and it didn't look as though they had very much experience. So I suggested they either ran a session at conference or became involved in writing questions for the GA quiz, which runs through the branches. And the comment I got back was, I'm not interested in doing Trivial Pursuit geography, which got me quite upset, and a couple of others, to be honest, as well. Because I've then since went into reading about retrieval practice and hinge questions and the value of quality multiple choice and quality free form questions. So if I ask that of either of you, what makes a good question? What are you looking for?
I can start with that. Most of questions in Educate are open-ended, by which I mean the students have to type in the answer, but the answer is fairly short. So it's not like they're asked to write, you know, a paragraph of text, but it could be two or three words. And for kind of online systems, I think it's really important, because what it allows you to do as a teacher is see what the students are really thinking. Whereas on a multiple choice question, you just see what their best guess was from the three or four choices that they got. Whereas when they're a bit more open-ended, you can see like what their actual misunderstandings were a bit better. So I think that's firstly important. But also, there's a kind of really basic point about questions, which is they really need to match the specification that the teacher is teaching, and they need to be quite exact. And often they're not really. And that has to be there. So with Educate, everything's organized related to the specification points of the GCSE specification that they're teaching. We cover like five or six different specifications, and all the questions are rearranged and organized and have different questions for different exam boards or awarding bodies or whatever you want to call them these days. So I think that's really important. And the language needs to be accessible and really, really, really clear. Because what we're doing is assessing and hopefully improving their knowledge and understanding of a geographical topic. We're not trying to challenge them in reading skills. So I think that's like a kind of basic level. That's what I think you have to get right before you can even start talking about anything else.
It has to be really tight as well, doesn't it? I think I get this impression anyway. It's got to be looking at a single skill or a single concept. Otherwise, it's too wide-ranging. And you know, as a teacher, I've done this before sometimes, I know what the answer is in my head. I know what I want them to get, but they can't tell from the question that I've asked. So they give me something a little bit random, and it's my questioning that's not right.
Yeah, I think writing questions is quite challenging. It's not the same as teaching, is it? I think, and we have a pretty strict process. Like we have a teacher who writes a question, then it gets edited by a specialist editor, then it gets reviewed by a teacher, then proofread, then checked and maybe illustrated, and then it gets put live, and then we review them after they've been, you know, after they've been answered like 1,000 times or something like that. So it's a bit more complicated than just, I'll just bash off a few questions here.
Yes. And you do have a lot of images as well that go with the questions to help with that conceptual understanding.
Well, that's particularly important for geography, like, you know, compared to maths and certain areas of science. A lot of geography is not only do the questions rely on the images, but I think the understanding it is quite a physical thing, isn't it? To understand, obviously, physical geography, but not necessarily that. Like, even human geography, you need lots of graphs and data, and often it's a physical. It really helps to have that kind of information.
I think with the geography questions that use the, diagrams, photographs, data, etc., that is what good geographers can do. Good geographers can look at a source and apply their knowledge. They can, they know a case study, but they can be given some information on a different case study and make those links. So with that aspect of Educate, I'm kind of going, it is a bit of support possibly for them having that figure or photograph, whatever it is, to help them with their answer. But it is also really important for their geographical skills that they can apply their knowledge. And so, yeah, I really like the questions with the sources that they have to kind of make those links to apply their knowledge. I think it's really useful for them to practice.
I know I've said this before on a podcast, so people will have heard me saying it, but one of the things that was a real light bulb moment for me was I was teaching A level, and it probably was the second time through, and there was an absolutely fantastic question about glaciation, Heretz Corries, and it was a photograph question. And I know I taught in the Stone Age, which meant that the children had only ever seen the photograph in the textbook. And they came out of the exam, and I said, "Did you do that question? It was absolutely fantastic. It was perfect." "Oh, was that Narette? I didn't recognize it." So the value of giving them lots of different images is so important. And I hadn't twigged until then. I was only, I don't know, what had been 24, something like that. So, but it is important, isn't it? Geography is, as you both said, is very visual. It needs graphs, it needs images, it needs all sorts to make them look at things in slightly different ways. But then you need the questions to be able to understand whether they've got that right or whether they've misunderstood what's going on.
The GA's program of CPD is designed to support your teaching of geography, whatever your phase or career stage. We provide research-informed, accessible and convenient professional development alongside quality-assured presenters, many of whom are practicing teachers with strong track records of teaching and leading geography in their own schools. As a registered delegate, you'll get access to the recording of your course, as well as all of the resources, so that you can revisit key points and share ideas with other members of staff in your school. With subject knowledge updates for teachers of all key stages, courses that focus specifically on leading geography and developing your curriculum, and opportunities for integrating fieldwork, there's something for everyone. For further information or to view our current programme of events, please go to our website at geography.org.uk.
The other thing that Educate does is it's not about posing questions to individuals, is it?
No, whole class, whole year group if you want.
Why do you do it that way?
Me or Charlie?
Ah, well, either here. I think I'll leave that to either of you.
Claire, I'll let you answer that one.
Okay, I mean, for me as a teacher, again, it is workload. We do teach students, but I currently have 2 year 11 classes, 2 year 13 classes. I can't be setting them individual questions. But using Educate is a really good way to do two things. One, I can see if there is a problem question or questions across the class, and that then is something that I need to address with all as their teacher. So quite commonly, and I can see it's in Charlie, in your list of like common mistakes, questions, percentage changes, just like very difficult seemingly, they forget all of that and leave it in maths. So it's something then I need to go over with them as a class. But then I can also very, very quickly have a scan and see individual students if they have missed, a certain like type of question, a certain number of questions, and then have those conversations with those students individually. And it can be very quick and efficient, and yet be very useful for them. The other function that we haven't spoken about yet is that when students have answered a question, they can also, if it comes up as being marked as wrong, they can query it. And my students really like doing that. But again, very quick for me to kind of review. And sometimes there is some scope with spelling, etc. Sometimes it might just be out of the remit of the spelling and the what they're saying is correct. But sometimes they haven't got the answer right yet, will still want me to review their answer, give them the mark for it, and they will type to me, "But miss, isn't this right? Because..." And quite often then that's is a real misconception or inappropriate use of vocabulary. So kind of using the wrong key terms. So for example, urban sprawl instead of urbanization. And that then leads to kind of that real like powerful learning for me to, I call them over to my desk when everybody's like working on something. I say, right, let's look at this word. Let's look at this word. So it is a really useful tool for, again, a whole class. If, you're ahead of geography and you want to set explicit revision for all of year 11 ahead of their mock exams, you can easily do that, but also does allow you to delve a bit deeper and have those conversations and have those opportunities with students on a more one-to-one basis as well.
I was interested to look at, I suppose it's the algorithm, I'm not sure what underpins this, but when I was looking at it, one of the students had written almost phonetically, but it had accepted his answer. And I was quite surprised at how it managed to do that when what was written was so far different from the real word. I was quite taken by how well it had managed to understand what the student was trying to get at.
I think it's really important that for each subject, Educake assesses them and helps them on that subject and not their ability to spell. I think it's to a point. So our kind of thing was, if an examiner would give the mark for it, or they might do, or somewhere thereabouts, then we should be giving them positive feedback about it, because it's about whether they understood things or not. So we have a fairly complex algorithm that looks at the answer and matches it to kind of fuzzy matches it to the actual accepted answer. So it'll accept different spelling mistakes and it'll accept more errors and more letters that are changed depending on the length of the answers and that kind of thing. And that's kind of reviewed over the years. So it gets better.
Mm. It has definitely got better. I do remember in 2018, it was just very little leeway on spelling. And I used to say there are spelling and punctuation and grammar marks available in the GCSE geography papers. So I'd be like, well, spelling is really important. It is really important. We can't get away from it. But yeah, now it is a bit more user-friendly, especially if students, they might have dyslexia, etc., then it doesn't penalise them as much for that and still allows them to demonstrate that they know it. They're just having a bit of difficulty with their spelling on that one. So it's become much more flexible.
Yeah, and what we try and do is we always show them, they say, like, we'll say their answer, which might be misspelled, is correct. But then the correct answer is, then we show them how it's spelled correctly. One thing I was thinking about doing was asking them to type in the correct answer in order to get to the next question. So it kind of reinforces it again, which we've been meaning to do for ages, but we've got tons of other priorities. And I think it might be kind of off-putting because there's a satisfaction of just kind of get it right, click the next question. But maybe if you have to type it in, it would kind of reinforce it. Just that physical act of typing the correct answer in might make it stick in their minds a bit more.
I think that sounds like a really good idea. Again, I make mine redo them to get like my 70, 80% pass rate. And I guess when they first hear that, really, but I got, 40%. I'm like, well, again, it's not 70. Go away and do it. Go away and learn it. Go away now. Have another go tonight and see what you can remember. It's the same questions. It's a bit of retrieval practice. We're building this like knowledge base. And so they would just do that with their spelling as well as they go. I think that sounds like a really positive move forward. Perhaps, I don't know how complicated it would be, there might be an option to click when you set the quiz as a teacher if you wanted to do that.
Yeah, we could definitely do that, yeah.
Mm. I would be setting them to put the correct spelling in.
When I was reading up about this, part of what I was looking at was just the nature of questioning. So I looked at the various titles that they give these questions now, whether it's diagnostic questions or whether it's hinge questions or whatever you're going to call them. But really what they're looking at and what you've just been talking about is their conceptual understanding. That's the important thing. If it drags out whether they've understood the concept, then that's the main thing, is what you're doing. But what interested me was, was an article that Simon Renshaw had written for the GA. I just want to read one sentence out from him. We've talked about how difficult it is about writing these questions. He says, "I find hinge questions quite challenging to create before I teach a particular part of a learning sequence. Despite my best preemptive efforts, I'm often surprised by the misconceptions some students experience." So we've talked about the difficulty of putting these questions together. And Charlie, you talked about the whole process that they go through to make sure that these questions are effective. What a key purpose is to draw out students who continue to have misconceptions after your teaching, so that you know that you can't move on because they haven't grabbed that concept yet. So that's the, I suppose that's the key to why it's called a hinge question. Educate has helped identify quite a lot of tricky topics, hasn't it? In across all subjects, I would think. But in geography, you've identified quite a number of topics that students find more challenging, more difficult.
Yeah, we have. And yeah, it's not always the ones that you kind of think are they going to be the problems. Like Claire, you mentioned percentage correct problem, wasn't it? The percentage increase. And we find that across multiple subjects. So in science and in geography, you're right about kind of leaving maths in the maths classroom. It does seem to happen. Like students who can quite easily draw a graph and interpret a graph in a maths lesson, get to a science lesson or a geography lesson, and they can't do it anymore. And it's like, I don't really know why, but it does seem consistently that those are the areas that there are problems. So for example, in our science content, we have a special unit, which is not related to the specification, despite me saying how everything has to relate to specifications, but it's about math skills. So it's specifically to help to work on math skills needed for science lessons. Yeah, I don't know why the answer is, Claire, you might have a better idea.
I think it's something that 12 years of teaching and we're still kind of not there yet. I was really pleased that the last summer's results, our AO4, our skills-based sections, were really good for our GCSE cohort last year. We've been putting a lot of work into not just the maths and the data skills, but also their map skills, etc., that they need for those papers. And we have now, the last summer's results was really positive on the AO4 increase. But now we've got a new cohort coming through that, again, like a percentage change. And there's always a step that they seem to kind of miss. And unless you just practice it over and over again, and even then sometimes it's just, I don't know what the kind of the magic ingredient is to make sure that they nail it in that final GCSE exam. Yeah. And we did hydrographs earlier and that was... Once they got going, again, I used the visualizer to model, you know, right, let's do some bars for our rainfall, let's do our line graph. And then they were quite happy off we're going. But it's almost like they just need that little kind of nudge, I think I'm finding with my students at the moment. And they panic about maths.
It's quite strange because they're kind of accessible kind of marks in an exam, aren't they?
Yeah.
They can't do this. They can pick up quite a good number of marks that might shift them up a grade or two.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. It's common across subjects. It's not just geography that applies to.
Quite often, mine, if I'm thinking back, would miss out some of the most obvious stuff. So if there was a describe and explain question, they wouldn't describe. They go straight into explaining and thinking the describe was rather too simple. And I never had a tool like this. When I was going through the demo, the number of ways to sort the students so that you can see which questions they're finding more challenging and which questions most of the class are getting was a really effective way of just being able to think, well, I know exactly what I'm going to have to do next lesson. I know exactly what I need to pick up on because I can see this percentage of the class just didn't get it at all. Whereas when you're faced with a sea of data, you don't there's too much, you don't see it. That sorting I thought was a real interesting way of honing in very tightly on the misconceptions or misunderstandings of the students.
It's something we work really hard on. Like, we want to help teachers teach. It sounds kind of a bit of a cliche, but you know, teachers spend a lot of time doing things that they don't particularly enjoy and also like didn't get into teaching because of to do, and also could be done by something else or some you know, like educate. Like, going through and marking a set of exercise books on Sunday afternoon is not why teachers got into teaching. My wife's a secondary teacher, and I know exactly how, like, that's not what motivates teachers. And so what we try and do is take that away, take that problem away, and give them information clearly so that they can then do the actual teaching and the engaging and using their kind of unique skills that is the kind of part of the job that they enjoy. Like, we've done a survey we do them every year, but it's about 4 hours a week that EduCake saves a typical teacher. Not on average, it's like a bit more, but I always feel quite proud of that, because I feel like if you think about it on an individual level, like, we've got about 25,000 teachers using EduCake every week. That's a lot of time that we're giving back to them, and not just like on a kind of personal level. Like, they're not at home marking with a pile of marking books. They're actually like spending time with their family, doing something they doing something they're enjoying, or you know, and even like just like having more energy so they can teach more effectively. Like, that teachers need more time for PPA and to rest so they can do their really demanding job.
And if you really feel that you want to answer the questions, set the questions yourself, you can, because there's a facility to be able to do that as well.
Yeah, because teachers asked for it, and did resist adding that, because I always felt like if teachers want to write their own questions, it means that we haven't written enough questions. But I think it does differ, and particularly in geography, like, a lot of it is localized, isn't it? You know, if you're doing a case study on like coastal erosion, you're going to want to do it on the bit near, if you're near the coast, on that bit, aren't you? It makes more sense to the students to sit. You can say, okay, you know, 50 miles away, that's what's happening, and they kind of know it. So it does.
But locally, a sense of place. If you're doing something very local, then you would need, I think, to want to create your own. But the facility's there, which is good.
Yeah, although I'm looking into AI to localize questions so that we can maybe adapt questions to local areas. It's pretty exciting, although it could go wrong. So we haven't done nothing yet. We're just looking into it now.
Just the other thing about kind of like, you know, creating our own questions stuff, but students can actually get EduCake to set them questions as well, like outside of teacher control. So like quite often for revision, like mine, you know, the vast majority of my students, they go through their entire GCSE of doing, like, my homework is 1 week they do an EduCake, the next week we do some exam questions, EduCake exam questions, EduCake exam questions. So they're really familiar with it. They like it. They like that instant kind of, yes, I know it, no, I don't. So when it comes to revision, quite often, you know, they'll say, well, I'm really confident now on rivers, river erosion. Okay, get onto EduCake and set yourself 10 questions on it, and it will generate 10 questions. It can generate more, and it's almost like potluck what questions they get. So are you really confident? Do you really know it? Let's see what EduCake throws at you and see how you get on. And so it's like a really nice kind of challenge for them. So I know that some of my students have been using it in that way as well to help them like check their revision.
Through the year, how often do you use it then? Retrieval practice, you'd really want to be doing every lesson to some extent, but you can't, I don't imagine you use EduCake every lesson.
No, but we predominantly use it for homework. I've not used it in lessons very often at all, really. No, but our department is a very much routine homework. I don't set homework that I don't see kind of helping them towards that end goal. So it is 1 week. So my year 10s this week, they're doing an EduCake on the flooding and hydrograph section. Next week, we'll do some exam questions. The week after, EduCake exam questions. So it becomes very routine for them and just builds it in. And sometimes, you know, they might do it. So the EduCake that they've done this week is basic. So I've done it kind of like after I've done all of the input, because there were lots of misconceptions about the factors causing flooding and a lack of kind of making those links and being able to explain. So we've kind of flipped it around the other way this time. And now they're doing an EduCake, and I'm hoping just to see lots of green ticks everywhere for that one coming in. But it's homework, and it's for us, it's every other week. I don't want to set it every week, because they also need to practice with those exam questions. And again, it's very different when you're in a class with them. It's very easy for them to ask for help. It's very easy for you to give them help and hints. It's a bit more challenging for them to have a go at the exam questions and maybe like the CPG workbooks, etc., at home on their own independently. So I tend to, just alternate between those two types of homework.
Yes, because of course there are workbooks that go along with all of this, aren't there, to help students. So they've got basically revision booklets, haven't they?
Yeah,
we do have study guides with built into Educate for large parts of it, which kind of come back to my days at working at CGP for revision guides. But what I wanted with these was to be like a kind of step-by-step, so they only see one step and they understand that when they click on the next step to understand that bit, then the next step and the next step. And so that's a kind of support, that's a bit of support for them. So teachers can add links to kind of, use bite size or interesting YouTube videos or whatever it is around the quiz, so that before they do the quiz, they can do those kind of things. And they can also access quite a lot of those when they set themselves quizzes, because that, you're right, that is done often by students, particularly around revision time. We've got a thing called the revision wizard, which just asks students a couple of questions, like a kind of chat bot in a way. So it just says, what would you like to study, and then choose a topic. Would you like to learn something new? How many questions would you like? And then what it does is it analyzes all their strengths and weaknesses across all the different topics and when they answered questions, and then creates a quiz for that student that's customized for that student. And that's really good for students who don't have the study skills that other students might have. So particularly if, like, let's say there's a student who wants to work but can't really organize or work out what topics to do, this will help them. And it means that a student can, particularly like if they haven't got a supportive family, then they can just do 10 questions or revision on their phone, maybe like in the living room, they've got a noisy house, whatever it is. Just means that they can get a bit of support, like having a teacher saying, well, why don't you just do this quiz? Why don't you do that quiz? That is really useful. I think the way that you're using Educate is fairly typical. Most of the quizzes are done at home, although about 20% are done in school, and that's usually in kind of in lessons, but particularly for cover as well. It's teachers find it really useful because they can set a quiz that if they've got one-to-one devices or if they've got a computer in that they can book, then the cover teaching come in and they can actually do meaningful work. And for an emergency cover session, that's quite useful. And it means that the ill teacher is not sitting up at 5:30 in the morning trying frantically to set cover so that they cannot be at school. It does help that way.
Mm. Claire, you talked about the big screen and liking to see all the green ticks.
Yeah.
That's the analysis tool. What do you do when you get a lot of red ticks?
Hold my head. But that's when you need to go into it and just think, start asking the why questions. And I guess this kind of links to something that I just wanted to go back to what Charlie was saying earlier about kind of like saving time and stuff. And just for people to really understand the power of Educate and the, this low stakes testing, this retrieval practice, and having it all kind of marked and kind of presented for you is then for you to do something with that information. So it can't just be set, right, go away and do it at home, right, click, job done, homework is set. Teachers need to then engage with it, and it is just in such an easy and accessible way to do that. It is all color coded. You can see your whole class in a spread. You can see individual students and kind of where they might have kind of fallen down a little bit. You can hover on the question, so it tells you what question. And then more importantly, again, if you've got, I have opened up Educate and just seen an entire row of like red crosses going down, and I'm going, right, what was that question and what has gone wrong here? What do I need to do as the teacher? Where do we need to go back and pick it up? Is it kind of a real like misconception about a concept, a key term? Is it a skill? And again, quite often it is a skill related one. I know that there's one question, Charlie, on sand dunes, and it throws them every year, and it's about the direction of the wind and kind of which direction was the wind blowing with this like cross profile of a dune. And that is just fascinating. So you put it up on the board and then they all go, oh yeah, that question. Oh, well, the correct answer is this. And actually getting them to elaborate and explain Okay, so you can tell me which way, but why? Why is that true? Why is that correct? And that's kind of the, you know, yes, it is a massive, for me, efficient, time-saving tool, but it helps with the learning if then you do something with the data and bring it into class, use it at the start of next lesson and make sure that you're addressing those, you know, again, misconceptions, the incorrections, the skills that are missing.
I've been reading about Dylan Williams and discussing the frequency of checking for understanding. And I think that this is such a powerful tool to enable teachers to do that so easily. That's the real advantage, is how powerful it is at helping you understand what students do and don't know and where you take your teaching next. And Charlie earlier on talked about how it takes a lot of that time the teachers would put into having to think that through. It takes that away to allow them time for more creative things. I think it's a fantastic tool. I only used it in the little demo and the half-hour session that I had as a student. But I wished I'd had it when I'd been a student. Oh, it's fantastic. The idea of being able to just randomly go on and say, right, just test me. I think it boosts the confidence of students. I think it's a real interesting way of getting them to be thinking, well, I'm taking a bit of charge of my own learning here. And hey, I know this, and I better go and have a look at that in a fun way, but a challenging way as well. I think it's a fantastic product. We're probably nearing the end now, so I'm going to ask you a couple of questions just to finish up with. But Charlie, you've spent years on this now. What's given you the most satisfaction about Educake?
Oh, that's a really difficult question to ask.
I'm full of them.
I suppose after a few years of my wife, who's trained as a teacher, and me not paying myself because I'm trying to write Educake, at first it was like being able to buy nicer food because we were living off porridge for about a year or two and couldn't buy any clothes or anything. So yeah, being able to actually, that was the first step. And then since then, it's just seeing, to be honest, just listening to teachers like Claire talk about the change it's made, really. I think it's a bit moving, really, in that I kind of did it because I wanted to solve a problem, but it actually kind of, in many ways, seems to have kind of made teachers' lives better in ways and helped students in ways that I didn't really anticipate. Teachers saying that, you know, that some of their students who've been like setting themselves quizzes or working on Educate, who were just not engaged before. Students who you wouldn't expect to be doing work, who do work, or teachers who can now have a bit more time for themselves or can support their own staff more. It's that's what kind of motivates me. And it's been my biggest satisfaction.
I think, yes, it works, and it works really effectively, I think, is what I'd have thought is if I created that. I think it's wonderful. Now, there's a figure that I just want you to conjure up, because I think it's more than millions, isn't it, the number of interactions now?
Yeah, well, so since the start of September this year, I think it's about 85 million questions have been answered. So in the last 7 or 8 weeks.
In 7 or 8 weeks.
Yeah, I was a bit shocked about that, because I remember getting really excited when we got to the first like 10,000. And now it's like millions a day. So it'll be over probably 2 billion questions answered by the end of this year in total, which is kind of a bit crazy. I mean, I was trying to explain it to my 5-year-old son. He was saying, what do you do? And I was saying, well, we have these quizzes. And I was saying, do you know how big is a billion? Because he wants to know about like what's infinity and a billion and all these things. And I was trying to explain how many questions a billion questions are. So I thought, oh, what about a worksheet with like 10 questions on a worksheet? Like, how high would it be? And it was like dozens of kilometers high, like these worksheets. And I kept thinking about like every worksheet that would have been a teacher marking that worksheet and another one and another one and another one like that. Like it's a bit like, what is it, 200 million worksheets they haven't answered. It's a bit difficult to get my head around.
I'm going to ask the same question of you as well now, Claire, because you're an experienced educator. What's it done to your teaching, and why do you keep using it?
What it's done to my teaching is just that instant overview of my class in front of me, what they know and what they don't know, and therefore what I need to do to address that, to help those students You know, do I need to reflect on that lesson? Do I need to change that for next time? What do I need to do with that class to move forward? It's just been really valuable for very low kind of input from my part. So yeah, it's efficient, it's time effective, it has a big impact on the students' learning. Our students really engage with it. They, you know, I don't think any student will kind of, you know, go wonderful, we've got homework set, yay. But our students recognize how it helps them to learn, and therefore their engagement, their like their homework and hand-in rate for it is fantastic. You know, the majority of my classes, 100% of students do their Educate homework every time it is set. That kind of speaks volumes to me. They're doing it. They can see that it helps them to learn. And as their teacher, I've got that instant data in front of me that I can respond to. Yeah, and the other satisfaction is that Educate quite often send out sweet treats in the post. Although I haven't had a curly whirly for a long time, and that's been a bit sad, Charlie.
We'll fix that, don't worry.
I've got one last question, and I think we should wind up. This has been absolutely fascinating. But you've partly given me an answer to this, Charlie, because you talked about AI. What next? What next for Educake? Where's it going?
Well, in a couple of weeks, there'll be a new tool released on Educake, which we haven't really talked to many teachers about, which I'm really excited about. That analyzes every student across every topic in the country. What it's going to allow teachers to do is see for each student where they have outperformed their expected performance or underperformed. And we do that by ranking every student nationally for every single topic individually, creating distributions for them and using kind of standard deviations with Z-scores. We then kind of extrapolate it all back. And it will come up with just a little up arrow if they've done better than we think they should have done, or a down arrow if they've done a bit worse. So that means that then a teacher can give praise where it's needed and some words where it's needed as well. And also that doesn't just work at a class level, so that works at a department level across years, and then for mats as well, for schools. So a mat, like a director of geography, can see which topics, like which classes down to a topic level are performing better or worse than expected. So then maybe they can say, actually, this school is teaching these topics really well. This school isn't teaching. And maybe they can share, like, what are they doing differently? What is working there and what's not working there? And equally within departments, you might be able to see, actually, this teacher, their class is outperforming on these topics. What are they doing there that's really, really working? And what could we learn from those particular topics? So I'm really, really excited about that. It's quite a massive piece of data analysis that's going on in the background, because we've got like 2 billion rows in multiple dimensions, and it wouldn't have been technically possible even a couple of years ago. But that is it's going to be brilliant. It's going to be really, really good.
It does. It sounds absolutely amazing. As is the tool, to be fair. I really enjoy playing about. I call it playing about because that's really what I was. It was playing. But what a fascinating tool to play about with. It was so much fun. I did enjoy becoming a student again and trying to work out whether I could set myself questions and what I knew and what I didn't know. Oops. But great. It's been fantastic. Thank you very much for chatting to me today. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure too. Brilliant.
Thank you both.